Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, checking on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Albader. Last week, for the first time, we were not here, so we want to thank Kieran Clark and Chef Bob Riccioli for being covering for us. So, Fred, we're back this week, back in the saddle, like you mentioned. How are you today?
I am great, Carlos. Really nice to have the week off. I did miss it, though. I did listen to Bob and Kieran, and I want to thank them so much for filling in for us. They did a fantastic job. We may just have to let them do that again sometime, Carlos.
Yeah, hey, now we Carlos, need to take a break.
Yeah, it's not. That's good to know. Hey, it's September. How did that happen? Where has the summer gone? All four majors are in the books, and we are beginning the second week of the FedEx Cup playoffs with the President's Cup from Korea just around the corner. Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, and Jason Day are ranked 1, 2, and 3 in the world and have firmly established themselves as dominant players in the game right now. We got a lot of golf to talk about, Carlos, so let's go.
We have a lot to talk about. Let's go with it. And we're going to have today, we're going to merge our VIG and practice range segments. You don't want to miss it. We're going to be talking about diversity in the sport of golf, and we're going to have a special guest, Mark Croft. So you don't want to miss that, PGA professional. But we're going to start right away with the weekend backspin, recapping the weekend's action. We have to start with the PGA Tour because the FedEx Cup, it's right starting the playoffs. Yeah, the playoffs. And Jason Day, he was 15 under par for the last two rounds at Plainfield Country Club in winning the Barclays by six shots from Henrik Stenson. They went into the final round of the first FedEx Cup playoff event, tied for the lead with Sangmin Bae of South Korea. But the PGA champion took to the front immediately as he opened with two birdies. The South Korean faltered with four drop shots on the front nine. He faded and ended the week in a tie for sixth, but it was Henrik Stenson who emerged as day's strongest challenger as he reeled off three straight birdies at the start of his back nine, but a drop shot at the 16th put paid to his chances, and Day was able to cruise home for victory. I just have read four things that I would like to take from the Barclays. You know, the number one would be Jason Day has now three victories in his last four starts. He won the Canadian Open after narrowly missing out on the playoff for the Open Championship, then claimed that memorable victory on the PGA Championship at Woodlands Strait. This title continues an incredible run for him. He has moved into first place in the FedEx Cup standings and has guaranteed that he will have a shot at the $10 million first dollar prize. Number two would be the battle, like he just mentioned, the battle for number one in the world has this new challenger, and it's Jason Day. What happened to him? I mean, whatever he went into with that vertigo treatment, he's working. Wow, he should have done it earlier. He's still third on the rankings, but he, Jordan Spieth, and Rory McIlroy now all have a mathematical chance to take that top spot at next week's Deutsche Bank Championship. McIlroy, he didn't play at the Barclays, and Jordan Spieth had a very disappointing week, missing the cut by five shots. The third one that I would have to say is about Camilo Villegas. He kept himself in the playoffs by the skin of the teeth. The top 100, as you all know, go to the Deutsche Bank at TPC Boston, and the Colombian, he looked to be safe with nine holes to play, but he bogeyed three straight and needed a par on the home hole to make it through. He missed the green and then pitched to 10 feet. He knew what he had to do. He held it. You know, Stewart Singh, he wasn't so lucky. He bogeyed the last two miss out, finishing 102. And finally, Brian Harman, he had an exciting Sunday. He became only the third player in the history of the PGA Tour to score two holes in one in the same round. He is the third and 14th holes at the Plainfield Country Club using a 7-iron and a 4-hybrid. So how about that the PGA Championship, I mean the PGA Tour at FedEx Cup and the Barclays Championship, Fred.
Hey, yeah, just another day at the office for Jason Day. Follows up his PGA Championship win with the first leg of the FedEx Cup. Is there any question about how important confidence is to a professional golfer? You know, in his last six events, you talked about a little bit, he was T9 at the U.S. Open, T4 at the Open Championship, just missing in on the playoff. He won the RBC Canadian. He then was T12 at WGC Bridgestone, and he won the PGA, and he won the Barclays. So, oh, by the way, Carlos, he has earned a little over $5 million in those six events. Just not a bad 2 months' work. As you mentioned, he's very much in the hunt to collect the $10 million FedEx Cup bonus as well. It's early for that, but, boy, the way he's playing, you got to consider him a really big factor. Shot 63-62 on the weekend to win by six shots. Henrik Stenson, Bubba Watson, Zach Blair, and Zach Johnson all posted four rounds in the 60s and couldn't get close today. Brian Harman, two holes and ones in a single round. 7-iron on the third from 183 yards, kaplunk. 4-hybrid at the 14th, 218 yards, unbelievable. Two holes in one in a single round is one of the rarest golf feats ever. There have only been three multiple aces in one 18-hole round in the history of the PGA Tour. Only six scores of 59 have been recorded. Eight consecutive birdies have been accomplished nine times, and 27 63s have been posted in major. Those are the rarest feats in golf, and multiple aces in an 18-hole round are by far the rarest. That is quite something. Hey, Carlos, what happened? We're not talking about Jordan Spieth. What happened to him? He missed the cut, used new irons, and fell out of the number one spot. Well, I bet somebody at Titleist is getting some nasty words over that deal. Official world golf ranking, Rory jumps back to number one, Jordan number two, Jason Day three, Bubba Watson number four, Justin Rose five, Jim Furyk six, and Dustin Johnson is seven. Hey, are Rory, Jordan, and Jason the new big three in golf? That's all the talk going around. Guys moving up into the top 100 for the Deutsche Bank this week. Spencer Levine, Jason Duffner, Carlos Ortiz, your boy from last year. We watched him, remember, qualified up through the web.com. He has had a really strong finish here at the end of the year, playing well. Mark Wilson, Luke Donald, he's been playing good here the last couple months. I look for him to start winning one. I think he's going to have a big year next year. Johnson Wagner, the mustache guy, Hudson Swafford, and Camilo Villegas, who you mentioned, all played themselves in. You know, that's unusual for that many guys to kind of jump up into the, and save themselves into the next week. Some big names missed. They bounced out. Adam Scott, Charles Schwartzel, Lee Westwood, Adam Gladwin, Johnny Huh. Graham Dillette all fell out, and their season's over until the President's Cup or October for the Fries.com, whichever comes first for them. And it only gets a little harder, Carlos, as only the top 70 will be invited to the BMW Championship next week at Conway Farms in Chicago, and only the top 30 make it to the Tour Championship.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what's going to happen. I mean, if all the movement keeps going like this, anything can happen, but definitely Jason Day's the man of the hour. He's super hot. She's supernova hot, so wow. What, like you said, confidence is all over his body language. Hey, all over the other tours, let's talk about the Champions Tours. Jeff Maggard, he overcome a two-stroke deficit at the start of the day, shooting a bogey-free 6-under 66, and eventually outpaced Paul Goitis to win by two strokes at the ninth edition of the Dick's Sporting Goods Open. Maggard won his second title in his last three starts and claimed his fourth tournament overall in the Champions Tour this year. He also notched his fifth career victory here with only his 28th start overall in the circuit. In addition to this win in Calgary, Maggard won a pair of major championships, the Regent's Tradition and the U.S. Open. He now, with 285 points, moves back atop the 2015 Schwab Cup standings for the first time since his victory at the Regents Tradition in mid-May. He now is 119 more points than Colin Montgomery, so it's getting good, this that's competition for the Schwab Cup. In the LPGA, the 34-year-old Kristen Mullis, she emerged from obscurity for a surprise one-stroke victory at the Yokohama Tire LPGA Classic on Sunday. The 10-year LPGA veteran, she had fellow American Austin Ernest and Taiwan's Yanni Tseng at the Senator course at Robert Trent Jones Golf Trail in Prattville, Alabama. Tamulis was among a large group that had to return to complete the third on Sunday because of weather delays on Friday and Saturday, but she piled up 12 birdies and a bogey in her final 29 holes for her first career victory. On the European Tour, Belgium's Thomas Peters, he held up the challenge of Pelle Edberg and Matthew Fitzpatrick to win the D plus D Rio Czech Masters at the Albatros Golf Resort. He's a 23-year-old who held steady over the closing holes and a birdie on the last, saw him close out a three-stroke victory. That was his first European Tour victory. And finally, the Web.com Tour, the first set of 25 PGA Tour cards for the next season, which starts in October, were awarded on Sunday at the conclusion of the Winco Foods Portland Open. 25 new members, and who was on top? Yes, I said it. Patton Kisir. Martin Piller was second. Dowie van der Walt, Peter Marinatti, Dickie Pride, who is the man with the hottest hands, or the hottest club, if you want to call it. He ended up fifth in the regular season. Those were the top five. Harald Varner, the third edge out Robert Oppenheimer, who missed the cut for the 25th and final card by just $943. You know, so that was incredible. And now the Web.com Tour will get a well-deserved week of rest after a pressure-packed run of 9 tournaments in 10 weeks before now it starts the Web.com Tour Finals in 2 weeks with the Hotel Fitness Championship at the Sycamore Hills Golf Club in Fort Wayne, Indiana. So, Fred, how about the rest of the week in action?
Yeah, Champions Tour, with his fourth win and ninth top 10 of the year in the championship, Jeff Maggart continues to dominate and jumps over Colin Montgomery for the number one spot in the Charles Schwab Cup race. With the four wins, Maggart has earned over $2 million for the year. His wins include two majors, and he hasn't missed a cut in 16 starts. Monty and Bernhard Langer are close on his heels. However, you know, Maggart, the way he's playing, he's got to be the favorite. Talk about the big three on the PGA Tour. Maggart, Monty, and Langer are by far the three best on the Champions Tour right now. But, you know, I didn't get to watch much golf last weekend, Carlos. You know, I was with my grandkids, and we were traveling around and doing some things. But I did get to see some of the LPGA Tour from Capitol Hill at Prattville, and I've been there. I've played those courses and love that place. Anybody that's heading down to Florida or southern Alabama from the north here, it's right along I-75. It's really easy to slip in there and play a couple rounds. Really great places to stay there, really good golf courses. So finally, Carlos, a veteran steps up and takes one from the kids. 34-year-old Chris Tamoulis made 5 birdies and 1 bogey on the front nine, added 3 more birds on the back, posted 17 under par early, and said, "Come and get me, girls." Yanni Tseng, Austin Ernst, Sidney Michael, Stacey Lewis, and Lexi Thompson tried, but they couldn't catch her. Tamoulis gets her first win in 11 years and 186 starts on the LPGA Tour. Stacey Lewis, close again, and Lexi Thompson was in the mix down to the end. Yanni Tseng, where's she been? She had by far her best showing in a long time. She lipped out a 15-foot birdie at the last that would have put her in the playoff with Tamoulis. Hopefully this gives her confidence to finish the year strong as the LPGA moves to Europe for the Evian and the Solheim Cup before heading to Asia for 5 events in October. They return to Mexico in mid-November and finish with the CME Group Championship the week before Thanksgiving. Hey, Carlos, there was another ladies' tournament. The Legends played in French Lick on the Pete Dye course up on the hill there. Julie Inkster won the event. It was her first time playing in a Legends Tour event. Dame Laura Davies was in the field. She played. She finished well. You know, and I don't think too many people really noticed, but, you know, Inkster is the Solheim Cup captain, and she did get her first win. You know, French Lick is one of my favorite places, and anyone that can post scores of 71-68 on that difficult golf course can still get their ball around the course, Carlos. On Sunday, Inkster shot a 4-under par 68 that left her at 5-under 139 and gave her the one-shot win. 63-year-old Jan Stevenson, and yes, Carlos, she still is the sexiest golfer ever, took the Super Legends title. Aha! Okay, now we come to the web.com. Hey, we got 46-year-old. This must be, we got Davis Love winning a PGA Tour. We got a 34-year-old lady winning, 11-year veteran winning on the LPGA Tour. We got Julie Inkster winning, and we got 46-year-old Dickie Pride winning in Portland on the web.com. He moves all the way up to number 5 in the top 25 on the web.com Tour, earns a return trip to the PGA Tour. Pride was the only player to move into the top 25, and he bumped Rob Oppenheim, who you said he just comes up $943 short. His only, Pride's only other win was the 1994 FedEx Cup St. Jude on the PGA Tour 21 years ago, Carlos. Hey, you mentioned Harold Varner III. He ends the web.com year at number 25 and becomes the first African-American to qualify for the PGA Tour via the web.com Tour. Guess what, Carlos? I don't think you probably knew this, but you know what? Guess where he hails from, Carlos? Akron, Ohio. Another Ohio guy, Carlos. Ohio is the center of the golf universe, as you know. The web.com final series comprised of the top 75 from the web.com and numbers 126 through 200 on the FedEx Cup list will start play next week at the Hotel Fitness at Fort Wayne. I'm going to try and go over there one or two days and hopefully get some good interviews for next week. Hey, Carlos, before we wrap this thing up, I got a question of the week for you. I know you're going to know the answer to this. How can a player qualify for both the web.com and PGA Tour for 2016 and not be able to play in the season-ending tournaments on either tour?
You're talking about Patrick Rogers, right?
I am talking about Patrick Rogers. I knew you'd know the answer to that. He played in 7 events on the web.com this year, had 1 win, 2 top 25s, finished number 24 on the web.com tour. So, you know, he's going to have status for 2016 on the PGA Tour from that. However, it gets better. He also played in 17 events on the PGA Tour, had 1 runner-up and 1/3, earned $1 million, enough to be a tour member, but because he isn't, his earnings did not qualify for FedEx Cup points, and he couldn't play in the playoffs. Because the PGA Tour doesn't want veterans cherry-picking events on the web.com tour or guys that are eligible for the PGA Tour, they don't want them going down and playing in the web.com tour final series, they won't allow him to play in that either. What a joke. As a top college player, Rogers quickly turned a handful of sponsored exemptions into his PGA Tour card for next season. He finished inside the top 125 in FedEx Cup points, but he is not a PGA Tour member, so he remains ineligible for the FedEx Cup playoffs. He is leaving millions of dollars in bonus money on the table here he's not leaving it. I mean, he's being denied it. Here is one of the best young players on the PGA Tour or the web.com tour this season, and he's sitting at home until mid-October for the start of the wraparound schedule at thefries.com. Needless to say, Carlos, the FedEx Cup playoff system still has a few kinks to work out going forward.
All I'm going to say is, you know, the web.com tour, Patton is here. That's it. You know that's what I was going to say. Patton Casino. Anyway, that wraps up our Week in Vaccine. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we already have our VIG, very important guest of the week. His name is Mark Croft, so don't go away. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for a merge, the first time that we're going to do this for you, a merge between our VIG, very important guest of the week, and the practice range. You know that every week we pick a topic, Fred and I, and go at it back and forth, giving our own take on it. That's the practice range. But we are adding our VIG from this week, who's Mark Croft. He's a longtime PGA professional from Yuma, Arizona, with his Mark Croft Golf Academy located at Las Barrancas Golf Complex in Yuma, Arizona. He's also the host of the Desert Southwest Golf Show every Tuesday morning on KBLU Radio. We want to welcome Mark Croft to the show. Welcome, Mark. How are you today?
Very good. Thank you very much for having me.
Fred.
Hey, Marcus. You are a very important guest. We've been trying to get you on here for a while, and the things worked out. I'm glad you could make her tonight.
Well, I appreciate it so much, Fred, for the opportunity. Great to be on your show.
So, Fred, Mark is here. We're going to be talking. Our topic of the week is going to be diversity in the sport of golf. And I'm going to start. We're going to be having a live round robin here between you and him, and I'm going to moderate this. I'm going to set up the topic.
Hey, Carlos?
Here. Yes, yes.
Before you get started with that, the reason that we're doing this tonight is that let me start with this. Mark put up
sure.
a great post on Facebook today, and it really piqued my interest. And so I'll give you a little heads up. We made it into an article. It's going to be in the September issue of the NWO Golf Links, which will be out on Wednesday. I bumped something else out. We really had it filled up. I was putting the magazine to bed, but I really liked this article so much that I bumped something else out and put it in. And Mark had a great story. Mark, why don't you tell us a little bit about your story of what you actually posted today. Just give us a real brief summary of that.
Well, we have a junior program here in Yuma that is year-round in conjunction with Mark Croft Golf. And I don't know why, but last Saturday we had our kids out, normal bunch of kids that we always have. We have anywhere between 15 and 25 a week, and this last week seemed to be a little bit smaller group than usual, and I was just looking around at the kids. I don't know why. It's the same kids I see every week. But all of a sudden, I just started to see all these different faces, and I just saw the diversity within the group of kids that we have. I saw Caucasian kids, saw African-American kids, saw Hispanic kids, saw Asian kids, saw Filipino kids, and it was just, I don't know why it hit me the way it did, but it just struck me that, wow, we've got a big, diverse group of people, and then I look over at the parents and I see the same diversity, and it was just something with all the terrible times and everything that we're having right now, and all about this and all about that, all these different things going on in the United States. And I thought, you know, what a great thing to sit down and write about is that, you know, golf is a sport for everybody. It welcomes everybody. It welcomes men. It welcomes women. It welcomes children. And it welcomes all ethnic groups. Golf is colorblind. And I thought that was just really important to share. So that's why I sat down and banged it out this morning.
It was really well done, and it really got my attention right away. So, Carlos, with that as an opening, I'll turn it back to you, sir. Carlos, are you there? Turn your mute
back
off.
Yes, I'm here. Yes, I'm here. Just didn't want to, you know, it happens, Mark. I'm sorry about that.
You get older, you know, mine goes a little bit, you know.
Yes, it does. Anyway, you know, let's start by saying that the golf industry's economic impact has been reported by various industry insiders as being nearly $70 billion per year. We've had the chance to have Steve Mona, the CEO of the World Golf Foundation, a couple of times on the show. He backs that up by saying that the game is enjoyed by 25 million Americans who play 455 million rounds annually at the nation's 15,350 facilities. Yeah, it's a $70 billion industry supporting 2 million jobs, $55.6 billion in annual wage income. You know, Michael Wan, from Commissioner of the LPGA, has said to us that we have entered an exciting time in the industry, the age of full inclusion. We're attracting, accepting more people, age, gender, race, handicap, etc. It's no longer just a talking point, but an actual reality across the board in the industry. I remember Reverend Jesse Jackson at the 2012 Ryder Cup in Medina saying that Tiger Woods has boosted the interest in the game among young African Americans, but they are adding many programs in schools to turn those kids into golfers or anywhere to play if those programs existed. I like his main point. As the game becomes more diverse and international at the professional level, there's an opportunity to grow the game in new places. So I'm going to ask you, Mark, the first question. So how do you think is golf dealing right now with diversity at the present time?
Well, I think I got a couple of questions out of that, Carlos. And number one, golf in schools it is very, very important. We have PGA members all over the United States now beginning to start their own teaching programs in elementary schools. We have a program here in Yuma that focuses on K through fifth grade. And we're introducing golf in a very easy, fundamental way to just have kids have the opportunity to see it for the first time. And the response has been absolutely phenomenal. There's nothing in the world like walking into a classroom of third graders with eyes wide open and ready to experience something brand new that they've never experienced before. We work usually with 35 to 40 kids in a class, and you'll go into the first class. How many people have ever played golf? And out of that 35 to 40 kids, you might see one hand go up. Or you might hear a child say, well, I've been with my dad once, or I've been with my grandpa once. But the overwhelming majority of those children have never, ever experienced golf, don't know what it is, have no idea how to play it. And we just begin from there with the basic fundamentals of putting and chipping and pitching. And like I said, the response has been overwhelming. And we've got those programs going on now around the United States. And they're growing on an everyday basis. And, yes, I think that right now with the tour the way it is and with the young talent that we have on the tour, not only on the PGA but on the LPGA tour, it's fantastic. Golf is in better hands right now than I think it's been in the last 15 years.
Fred, with that being said, you know that in the World Golf Hall of Fame, Simone has said that there is an exhibition now, a permanent exhibition, known as the Honoring the Legacy, a tribute to African Americans in golf, and it results their personalities such as Althea Gibson, Joe Louis, and Tiger Woods. You see all those international players coming in, and like Mark was saying, that there is a movement towards getting more kids to play golf. What do you see right now with that internationalization of the game of golf?
Well, you know, Carl, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
You know what? I see a couple things, Mark and Carlos. First, here in Toledo, we have a very big first tee program. And they have worked very hard to get into the school programs here. And there are over 10,000 kids in Toledo that come through the first tee program. So they're really working in the schools here through that. But also on the junior level, I mean, we've seen on the national level for juniors in just the last few years, we've seen Lydia Ko, a teenager from New Zealand, dominate the women's amateur game. U.S. amateur, you know, she won professional tournaments as an amateur. She attained the number one ranked amateur woman in the world for nearly 3 years. You know, Minji Lee is another name that had an outstanding amateur career as a youngster and is now a pro. You know, we've had a host of other young Asian players pop up, you know, in the big events. So also last year, if you remember Mariah Stackhouse, who is an African-American young lady and is now a standout at Stanford, was named the top female amateur golfer by Global Golf Post last year. So I'm seeing more and more diversity on the national level, and I think it seems to me that the chatter I see and what I'm hearing, there's more grassroots, just like Mark with his programs in the schools there in Yuma, to get golf into the schools. The PGA has their team, their junior team concept going. You know, I really think they see that to really do the right thing to grow the game, they've got to get into the schools, and that will bring lower income families, lower income children, as well as, you know, country club children, and make it accessible for everybody.
What's your take, Mark, on that one?
Well, I agree with that we're beginning to see diversity. But I think that the school has to be a little bit proactive too. I think that it would be helpful if the physical education directors at the school went and contacted their local golf professional and said, "Hey, I want to start a golf program in my school. How do I do that? I want to get a program going in the classrooms for kids that has to do with golf. How do I do that?" Instead of maybe sitting around waiting for someone to come and talk to them. Like I said, it's the game is there. And it's great what Fred talks about as far as these young players coming out on the tour. But one of the other things that I think that sometimes we miss in golf is that the values that golf teaches, the citizenship that golf teaches. And I think that is so important to be able to share that, especially with our younger kids, K through 5, and teaching them the values that you learn from playing the game of golf. You learn sportsmanship. You learn respect. You learn care of the property. You learn perseverance. There's a lot of different things that you learn that are very, very valuable throughout life, that are going to be valuable in the classroom, that are going to be valuable in your job someday. And I think that golf has something more to teach than just the game of golf itself. I think that's very, very important.
Amen, brother.
Fred, you know, there are over 28,000 PGA professionals, and the number of youth golfers has grown over 2-3 million. And there was the acquisition of the PGA Junior League Golf, which is the sport's answer to the Little League, and that further elevates the youth commitments from the PGA, and you know that Rory McIlroy is now serving as an official ambassador. Who better than the world number one? We've seen now Jordan Spieth, who also became number one, another youngster, and Jason Day right now competing also to become the number one. He's not that young, but he's still young, right? So there is an opportunity for those young golfers to get interested more and more. And maybe also it could get to be more diversified as well. Do you think that's a chance that's going to be happening?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, I think absolutely, Bo, yes. And throw in there, you know, Susie Whaley is now at the top echelon of the PGA of America. And as you know, she's been on the show and we've talked to her, and her mission is to bring more women and families and children to the game. And she's really big with the junior league concept. That is her baby, and so yeah, we're going to see more of that. And as she grows her power base and becomes more and more influential at the top of the PGA of America, you know, you're going to hear more and more from her about that.
How about your take, Mark?
PGA Junior League is a phenomenal program, and we do it here in Yuma. We have several different functions that we do during the summer here in Yuma that deal with golf. We have our PGA Antigua Tour championships, which is 6 weeks of individual play events. But the more that we can reach out to kids and the more organization in the game that we can give them, the better we are. Instead of just having them come together on a Saturday for a clinic or whatever, but actually giving them organization and structure. And I think that's why it's going to work in schools better, is because schools are seen as organization and structure. And you need that organization and structure element to really make it work. And PGA Junior League is going to do nothing but get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger.
I have to agree with the both of you on that one. Mark, one more question that I have for you. If there was one thing that you could say, hey, if you were able to do one thing to promote diversification and massification of golf, what would that be?
Well, I'd go to bed tonight and ask God if he could make 100 of them, or maybe 1,000.
That can happen. I'm sorry.
We could stand it. I don't know if we could stand it or not.
But that's not going to happen. No, I wish that I had the opportunity to really reach out and talk to as many people as I possibly can and tell them what a absolutely phenomenal game the game of golf is and what it gives people who play the game, young, old, it doesn't matter. I've been in the golf industry now for over 40 years, and I've seen things in that period of time that are just absolutely phenomenal, and I want everybody to have the opportunity to be able to experience that and to experience the fun of the game, the camaraderie of game, and just be able to get out and enjoy the outdoors, enjoy a nice walk on a Sunday afternoon. And family golf is huge. I want to see more families out together. I want to see more mom and dads playing golf with their kids. And I think that if we do all those things and we continue to grow all those things and move in that direction, that in the next 10 years we're going to see a growth in golf that is absolutely phenomenal.
Fred, I think we could talk about an hour and a half about this subject and still have things to say. So I'm going to leave you to say one more thing and any other question that you would have for Mark before we close the segment.
No, I have another half page of stuff here, Carlos. So I'll know you. If I start, you'll hit the mute button. I know you. So I will. I'll keep my comments short here. But you know, we just touched on some high points here this evening, and Harold Varner becoming the first African-American to qualify for the PGA Tour via the web.com. You got Sedina Parks and Cheyenne Woods both on the LPGA Tour this year. We're seeing more and more diversity. And I know Donald Trump probably wouldn't approve of this conversation, but golf is inclusive. It does need to become more important at the school level and with children. That's where the game really needs to begin. You know, you get kids learn to play baseball in school when they're young, or they play basketball, or they play football. You know, they don't start playing golf until maybe they're in college or you know, later on after they can't play the other sports anymore. Let's get them started when they're younger, and let's include everybody. Let's get, you know, economically challenged and everybody in there. So, these are just the high points, Carlos. But we'll continue this discussion another time. And, Mark, thanks so much for coming in and talking with us this evening.
Thank you guys very much. I appreciate it.
Mark, thank you for your time. I know that we can set up maybe some other time and continue to talk about this and more of your great things that you're doing as well. Enjoyed your talking to you. And fans, visit his website. It's markcroftgolf.com. You know, his academy, Mark Croft Golf Academy, located at Las Barrancas Golf Complex in Yuma, Arizona. So visit his website.
I bet you can't say that good, Mark. I bet he says that a lot better than you do.
Well, he says it like a true Latino. I say it like a true gringo.
You got it. There you go.
But that's diversity, my friend. We still
there you go.
The
we got
doctor.
It right here on the show.
That's
right.
Here.
And hey, if we Mark. Had Kieran on tonight from Scotland, that'd barely be diverse. He's way out here. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you guys very much. I appreciate it. Have a good evening.
You too. There you have it. That was Mark Cross, longtime PGA professional in Yuma, Arizona, and also the host of the Desert Southwest Golf Show every Tuesday morning on KBLU Radio. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we have the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network, so don't go away.
Thank you for listening to the Back 9 Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. Fred, I believe you have something to say about Martin Kaymer. How about that?
Yeah, you know, we talked earlier about Patrick Rogers missing out on a chance to play in the FedEx Cup or even the Web.com Tour Finals. You know, there's a lot of rules to maintain your PGA Tour playing privileges. You know, we've talked before about how difficult it is for European Tour players, especially to support their home tour, but still participate in the required number of events here on the U.S. Tour. Basically, to keep your card, a player must finish inside the top 125 on the FedEx Cup point list and plan a minimum of 15 events. Well, Martin Kaymer kind of expected to play in three FedEx Cup playoff events, but he's not going to make it to the Deutsche Bank this week and only has 13 starts in the U.S. this year. So he took some exemptions to play tournaments in Europe and cut his PGA Tour starts a little short. He's going to lose some valuable retirement plan credits because he's not had 150 starts in the PGA Tour yet. He's going to be limited to a maximum of 12 starts next season. And in addition, he'll miss the FedEx Cup. He's going to be ineligible for it next year again because he's not a tour member. This is really a costly mistake on Kaymer's part. It's just cost him millions of dollars. The PGA Tour wants him here. He's playing well enough to make more money here, and the endorsement money is bigger here. So I really think if I were Martin Kaymer, I would be looking for a new management team to advise me on when and where I should be playing because somebody dropped a ball in Martin Kaymer's camp here this year.
Oh, my God. I don't know how he – you say it, and I still don't believe it. I mean, how could he miss that? I mean, we're talking about the FedEx Cup. Playoffs, $10 million. It's incredible. But anyway, I have something for you. Heart Levin, chain-smoking golfer John Daly. He played in a tournament in Mississippi this weekend, and he's round on Sunday – on Saturday, ended with him collapsing on the 18th tee and then being rushed to the hospital. Daly had reported being struggling with the heat all day on Saturday and was brought down by a collapsed lung. His playing partner, Will Dudley, described the frightening scene to the Golf Channel by saying, "I had my arm around him when he went down. He had no pulse and wasn't breathing for close to 3 minutes. It was kind of a miracle." Dudley added that there was a nurse in the gallery who administered CPR. The two-time major champion was taken by ambulance to the Baptist Medical Center on Saturday after he collapsed on the 18th tee during an outing at Deerfield Country Club. Daly said doctors ran tests and x-rays but found no other serious problems besides the lung. Deerfield Club Pro Lee Brennan says Daly was having trouble with the heat Saturday and had difficulty breathing before being taken to the hospital. Temperatures were near 90 degrees there. According to Daly's manager, the collapsed lung was caused by a rib injury that Daly has been dealing with since 2007, one that has been affecting the golfers' breathing. But why a collapse along on Saturday and not any of the many other rounds Daly has played since 2007? He has an explanation. Daly's right hand was heavily taped on Sunday. He said he hurt it while putting a new tire on his son's golf cart earlier this week, which indirectly led to Saturday's problems. Really? Okay. Daly said then, I had to change my swing to get a good grip, and the doctor said the change in motion is likely what led to the collapse line. See somebody else messing up with the swing. This is a very John Daly thing to happen to John Daly. Staying in character, Daly returned to the course on Sunday less than 24 hours after he was stricken on the course and was spotted smoking cigarettes on the clubhouse patio, according to AP. And yes, you bet you're behind, he got out there and played his round. Daly's hard-living ways have been well-documented during his turbulent career on the PGA Tour. Most recently, he threw his 6-iron into Lake Michigan during the PGA Championship after hitting 3 balls into the water. So he figured, hey, I can throw that. The club as well. Hey, Fred, John Daly being John Daly.
Oh, wait a minute, Carl. I got to put my beer down and put my cigarette down. Hang on a second. Hang on a minute. Hey, as you know, as we all know, the ban on the anchored stroke for putting goes into effect in less than 4 months. Boy, 2016 seemed like a long ways away, you know, last year, but, you know, it's upon us. Several players are still wielding their long wands and will face difficult options January 1st. Adam Scott has announced that he's going to continue to use the same putter he's been using for the past few years, but will not anchor it under his chin to his chest as he has been doing. He did use a short putter earlier this year for a couple weeks. The experiment didn't last long. He played with Doral, Innisbrook, and Bay Hill before going back to the long one that won him his only major championship at the 2013 Masters. Scott said, I've got as far as I see, I've got two good options. I can unanchor the long putter, I do that well, or putt with a short one, and I know what I'm up for there because I used it a few rounds this year. I like the long one with the same action I've been using. I just have to shorten the putter a few inches and everything else stays the same. The putter is so good, if there was any concern of it not being stable when it's unanchored, is gone. Scott has not had a very good year by his standards. In 15 starts on the PGA Tour, he only has 3 top 10 finishes, with his best being a T4 at Doral back in March and the U.S. Open. He fell outside the top 100 after the Barclays. He's out of the FedEx Cup playoff and won't play again until the President's Cup in Korea in October. He's also looking for a permanent caddy. If a caddy's out there looking for a job, he did coax Stevie Williams out of retirement for a few events this year for the majors. He's trying to talk him into coming back next year. Still doesn't know what he's going to do about that, though. He's kind of open. He's a little bit undecided on the caddy issue, but he knows what he's going to do about his putter, Carlos.
He's certainly not changing it. For sure he won't, man, and he shouldn't. Anyway, there were some, you know, the PGA Tour Monday announced long-debated changes to the format of the President's Cup, including reducing the total points and eliminating sudden death playoffs. The new rules, determined after months of discussion, will take effect at this year's Cup in Incheon City, Korea, October 8th to the 11th. The changes. Total points will be reduced from 34 to 30 with 5-4-bowl and 5-4-some matches on Thursday and Friday and 4-4-bowl and 4-4-some matches on Saturday. The first 4 President's Cup events were played with a total of 32. The next one, foursome, 4-bowl, and single matches that are tied after 18 holes will remain draws, with each team receiving a half point. Previously, singles matches that were tied were extended to sudden death to determine the winner. Next, each player will be required to participate in 2 of the first 4 sessions, with every player competing Sunday. In the past, team members were required to play in 3 of the 4-4-bowl foursome segments. And finally, the order of the matches for Thursday and Friday will be determined by the host team captain. For 2015, international team captain Nick Price can determine which format, 4-bowl or foursomes, will be played Thursday and Friday. The international team had advocated a reduction in total points to help keep matches close. The U.S. team, which has won 6 of the last 7 Cups by at least 3 points, had wanted to, the format to remain unchanged. According to Nick Price, who is the captain of the international team, fewer points gives a stronger team less of an advantage as the weakest players do not compete as often, and he believes this would help the internationals improve a dismal record of just 1 win against the U.S. in 10 editions. The sides engaged in discussions over several months without reaching a consensus, and PGA Tour Commissioner Tim Fincham ended up making the decision that would be best for the event overall. While the commission also said that the changes they are implementing will strike a balance between maintaining the unique makeup of the President's Cup, which is important to the players, fans, sponsors, and partners, and the competitive environment for both teams, reality is where they are bringing it more in line with the Ryder Cup. And by the way, the President's Cup's captain's picks will be next Tuesday, so we'll be all over it.
Yeah, they got to make that thing so it's a little bit more equitable, and they got to hide some of those President's Cup guys, the international guys. So they can't play everybody. They got to set some of those guys. So that's what's going to happen. That had to happen. Hey, how much time have I got here, Carlos? Do I have time to do my 420 golf tournament thing here? What do we want to do here?
Yeah, we have plenty of time. So go ahead.
Oh, we're in good shape? All right, good.
Yeah.
Hey, I just can't help it. I got to talk about this. I suggested this as a topic for Bob and Kieran last week, but I failed to send them the appropriate information, the press release or the website to do their research. The first annual 420 golf tournament. You know what 420 means, right, Carlos? Mary Jane, marijuana, all that pot, all that good stuff. The first annual 420 golf tournament was held August 29 in San Jose, California. Where else, right? California, dude. It and the 420 teams were established to show that cannabis users are not lazy, hey, unmotivated, hey, or stoners, dude, and to destigmatize the millions who use cannabis in a healthy and responsible lifestyle. We've all been lied to and misled about cannabis. Via athletic achievement, we will change the stereotypes built up during the era of prohibition. So, all of the events in this thing, in addition to the golf, have some kind of a race or challenge or endeavor. And at the finish line of each event, competitors are treated to a 2-hour beer garden. Where's the pot, dude? And a concert from top bands. So, these guys are promoting the cannabis lifestyle through athletic endeavor promotion and golf. I love it. We were talking to Mark just now about inclusion and diversity. How diverse can you get when you're smoking pot on the golf course, Carlos? I love that story. I had to talk about it. I'm sorry.
They're gonna go open smoke with like chicken shine. So we'll see what happens. Open smoke. Hey, I have one more piece of news, and one unfortunate one, because the Champions Tour has canceled its tournament this September in China near the port where an explosion and subsequent fire, which took place after a fire started in a container storage facility, killed more than 100 people, including several firefighters and paramedics, and left several more missing. The Pacific Links China Championship was to be held September 18th to the 20th at the 27th Club in Tianjin, and the golf club and adjacent area were not affected by the blast of August 12th at the storage facility there in that port, but organizers decided that it was best to cancel the tournament out of respect of a grieving community, which to me is definitely the way to go. Pacific Links International Chairman Sun Liping says it's time to support the victims, families, and friends and the community of Tianjin. Greg McLaughlin, who's the Champions Tour president, said in a statement on the tour website that the tournament will still take place next year. The Pacific Links China Championship had replaced the Pacific Links Hawaii Championship and was set to be the first Champions Tour event to be played in China. That closes our Par 5 news presented by United Golf Network. And Fred, I believe you have a word from our sponsors.
Yeah, you know, Carlos, United Golf Network wants every golfer to enjoy the game more and have the opportunity to earn money while doing it. They offer a top line of golf products, including popular name brands like Nike, Wilson, Greg Norman, Ashworth, TaylorMade, Adidas, and Where to Win, and they will match any price that's out there to Carlos through their program. Everything a golfer needs, clubs, balls, bags, shoes, apparel, and accessories are available with discount coupons for huge savings. United Golf Network not only has an excellent product line, they also offer every golf nut the chance to earn commissions on product through their director's program. Your buddies need some product, they need some balls, they need some shirts, they need some hats. You get them for them, you buy them through UGN, you get a commission, they get the best deal. It's a win-win for everybody. United Golf Network also provides instant and free access to Global Affinity, which offers discounted travel through Wyndham Endless Vacations. And this is the one I really like, My Golf in the U.S. You get discounted rounds of golf in 16 states and 3 Canadian provinces. So if you're traveling around, you want to get some cheap golf, these are the guys to see it. Sign up for their program. So visit UnitedGolfNetwork.com today and check out the products, discounts, and their opportunity, Carlos.
That wraps up our Par 5 units presented by United Golf Network. We're going to take one more break. When we come back, we'll have our final putts.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our final putts. Fred, what do you have for us as your final putts?
Yeah, just a real quick mention. This week in the, as we all know, Ryan Palmer's father passed away, yet he played in the Barclays. You know, it's a tough time of the year for a guy to, for a professional golfer to take off. If you're in the playoffs, you pretty much got to play. And so he did play on, and there's a really great piece by Ron Green Jr. in the Global Golf Post that came out on Monday about the backstory on that. So Ron always does a good job. Also, you remember the vision of Greenbrier's owner James Justice passing out cash for those holes in one at last year's Greenbrier Classic. Well, the insurance company is reneging on Justice's claim for reimbursement, claiming the hole wasn't measured correctly and it's too short. I've played that hole, Carlos. I don't care. You could tee it up there by the ditch, and it would still be tough to get a hole-in-one there. So I don't think the insurance company has too much of a claim there, but I guess they're being a little bit belligerent about it. But also, there's quite an argument going around about who's the rookie of the year, Tony Finau or Justin Thomas. Maybe we can take that up as a topic, and we'll talk about that some more maybe next week.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you right now, my take is Justin Thomas. But one more thing that I'm just going to quick mention here. There's a little worried, you know, the President's Cup is going to be played at Incheon City in South Korea. And as you all know, there's this heightened problem between the Koreas, the North and the South Korea, earlier this month, following a heightened standoff that, you know, it would end the vicious cycle of tension. You know, the president said on Tuesday that she had expressed optimism that there's a six-point deal to be struck between them and will come to an end. I mean, this has been ongoing for all these years, and I don't think there should be any problem with the President's Cup. The Incheon City is really far from the border. So, and besides, we've all seen all the great, you know, security measures that they do have for the golf facilities so far in the golf tournaments that have been played there. I don't think that the President's Cup should be anything to worry about. So with that in mind, we're going to close our show for this week. That wraps up another week of the Backline Report presented by edraft.com. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Thank you for listening to us for the past hour. Special thanks to our VIG, very important guest of the week, Mark Croft. Thank you for his great insight in the diversity round-robin we had with Fred here. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and here on Block Talk Radio. Also, for tuning or download our show on iTunes. If you haven't done so, follow the show. Our Twitter ID is at Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres. Along with Fred Alvader, we wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.